For all of our listeners out there, you have until April 6, 2012 to enter the Webcomic Beacon Spring 2012 giveaway. That's right, we have 4 copies of the Family Bones graphic novel 2-volume sets ready to be given away for people that go to webcastbeacon.com/giveaway. Find out ways that you can enter to win this, and one winner will, in addition to the graphic novel 2-volume set, will also get the Boobles' first album, which is, well, the Boobles are a memory parody of Beatles songs, basically, and you can get their first album if you are the top winner of this year's Spring 2012 giveaway. For more information, go to webcastbeacon.com/giveaway to find out how you can enter, and you only have until April 6th, 2012.
You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
It's Sunday, April 1st, 2012, and this is episode 62 of the Webbeacon Newscast. From BladeBunny.com, Thomas Revor.
I am Thomas Revor, and I'll see you in the funny papers.
From alexisguide.net, Thomas Revor.
Hello, I'm Thomas Revor from 910cmx.com.
Our associate news editor, Thomas Revor.
It's Thomas Revor.
And that leaves me. I am Spartacus from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. And this is the news. Over at Keen, we find out that they've hired on a new person today. Their big news story is that they have hired co-publisher Dan DiDio away from DC Comics to help head up their new entertainment division. DiDio is quoted as saying, "I've spent an excellent decade here at DC Comics, but I feel that my time is here to move on. I've done all the damage that I can." Good luck over at your new job over at Keen Spot. And now over to our Buzz division with Alex.
All right, this week in Buzz, first up, the Rubin Awards have announced their nominations this year. This comes to us from Rubin.org. And in the online comic strip division, the nominees are Matthew Inman of The Oatmeal, Mike Krahulik and Jerry Holkins of Penny Arcade, and John Rosenberg of Scenes of a Multiverse. So congratulations to all the nominees. Next up, over in Canada, the Doug Wright Awards have been announced over on comicsbeat.com. The Doug Wright Awards are for English language Canadian comics, and there are 3 different categories. There's a mix of, you know, familiar names and not so familiar names, and categories such as best book and other stuff like that. Winners will be announced on May 5th at Toronto's Jackman Hall at the Art Gallery of Ontario at the Toronto Comic Arts Festival. Indeed. And in other news, over on evil-comic.com, Brad Geiger is going full-time with Evil Incorporated. Due to some layoffs at the Philadelphia Daily News, where Geiger has been holding down a day job, he decided to take the severance package and go full-time with his comics, which he says he will give him, you know, extra time to work on some side projects that he's been looking for time to do all these years. And he's very excited about going full-time, and all the best to him for that. And now we go over to business with Jason.
Thanks, Alex. Yes, it's April Fool's Day weekend, and of course we have 2 stories. The first one is in the business section is from Examiner.com. We have an interview with one of the people over at Shipty Lock. Now, we've talked a lot about Shipty Lock, about how they're refurbing a lot of the old Capcom IP and putting them into webcomics in an effort to bring them more exposure. This interview is actually with Matt Moylan and artist Dax Gordine, I hope I pronounced that correctly, over at Udon Entertainment. And they will be actually publishing an online comic, a webcomic for Bravo Man. And this interview is interesting. It tells about how they've come up with the look and the comics and how this comic is being written and what their hope is in getting the exposure out there. Take a look at it. There's some really nice reactions as to, you know, what they're going to be doing with the comic, what other comics may be coming out from Capcom, and, you know, really what to expect coming up from Shifty Lock. On to the next story, which we have coming from us to, actually, from StarPiratesComic.net. This is for a Swede gallery for Least I Could Do. Now, full disclosure, we were actually at the Webcomic Speaking given a press release from StarPiratesComic.net, actually from Snakehead Games, who wanted us to know about what was going on with them and the Least I Could Do comic. They are actually working with the publisher of Least I Could Do, Blind Ferret Entertainment, and Snakehead Games are putting together this Sweeting contest, which is basically what it says, is they are asking for people beginning March 27th to take pictures of them reenacting or sweeting their favorite parts of the Least I Could Do comic so that they can post it up on the StarPiratesComic.net website. And it may be a little late when you're listening to this because they'll be choosing the best one on April 2nd. We'll try and get this out for you in time. But take a look at it. The grand prize for when they choose this would be a cameo / voice acting appearance in the pilot episode of The Least I Could Do. I guess this is for the video. And also an invitation to the screening. And a signed limited edition print and a book of your choosing. So even if it is a little too late, take a look. It looks like it's something interesting coming out of there. And that's the end of the business news.
And it's time for our first break. We will be back with more news and our discussion right after this.
Greetings, Webcomic Beacon newscast listeners. This is Fess from the Webcomic Beacon here just to let you know that the Webcomic Z Webcomic List site is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network, and we are trying to build it up. So we are going to be looking for some new content creators and providers. You can email me at webcomicz@gmail.com. In the meantime, I'll be just interjecting some additions to the site as each newscast appears. Some of you may have noticed that I've been adding Webcomic Z content to the newscast show notes. In past weeks, we've had some tutorials from Jules Rivera from Valkyrie Squadron. We've had webcomic interviews by Amy Leitz of Epic Fail, as well as some reviews from Caitlin Hart. So you can go ahead to webcomicz.com and check out the offerings there. The newscast also gets posted there. So go ahead and check that out. Otherwise, you can just stay watching the Webcomic Beacon newscast site for Webcomic Z updates. Otherwise, webcomicz.com. And now back to the newscast.
Welcome back to our April 1st show here at the Webcomic Beacon newscast. And let's go ahead and pick right back up with it over at our education section with Alex. Alex?
This week in education, first we have two stories, and first up is What's Up With Manga, a comic fan's deep dive. Over on abc2news.com via Robot6, we have a self-professed comic fan asking the question of why isn't there much overlap between the manga readers and the American or Western comic readers? Let's see.
I feel like I'm in Seinfeld routine. You know, what's up with manga?
What's up with manga, right? Sorry, I was trying to figure out the gender of the author of the piece, so I didn't miss
it. It's manga. You can't tell anyway.
Well, yes, but the author of the article is a man, as far as I can tell, which is what I was checking. Sorry.
Welcome to our April 1st show, folks. Yeah, we're having way too much fun here.
Apparently, all format is falling apart.
That's some more awkward pauses.
Yes.
All right.
Hey, so Alex, what's the other news in the education section?
You know what? I'm just going to leave. You guys can finish.
Screw you guys.
God, I lost 3 weeks without me. So
how about that PBS?
So anyway, what Christian Sager, the author of this article, did was he read about 1,000 pages of manga, which I would estimate to be roughly 10 volumes, and had a discussion with a colleague of his who was a quote-unquote manga expert, and sort of explored the differences between the two and sort of the cultures, differences, and whatnot. And so it's an interesting article, not necessarily something that we haven't read before, on the difference of American comics and Asian comics, but it's something interesting to read about. And then next up is a short 6-minute documentary by PBS about art on the internet over on comicstalk.com. PBS made this documentary about Kickstarter and Creative Commons and how they are changing the landscape of art online. And that's it for education. Over to Tech with Tom.
Thank you, Alex. Our one and only story for the tech division today is talking about LG. They have just announced that they've begun mass production of the world's first flexible plastic e-ink display, with finished devices expected to hit Europe next month. LG says that these displays have half the weight and are 30% thinner than the heavy, hard, prone-to-cracking glass laminate e-ink displays that are currently used in e-book readers like Kindle and Nook. I'm just wondering how soon it is before we have readable t-shirts. I know that there are a few people out there that I would love to use as a touchscreen.
Oh.
That's inappropriate.
But it is a very fascinating read, and the story reads like it's going to be primarily just black and white LCDs in these flexible displays, but we can see that color will probably not be that much longer behind it. So
soon.
Yeah, we're going to be seeing all sorts of new devices, not just and more versatility and resilience in the devices with something like this. But now over to our tidbits. Let's go ahead and take it away, Eric.
All right. Thank you, Tom. Tidbits this week. Last week we talked to you about Batman being arrested on the road. Well, we found out more about this Batman. This Batman is a volunteer, Lenny Batman Robinson, volunteers at hospitals, and has been doing charity work for quite some time dressed up as Batman. So we get the full story on that one. And that's coming to us from the Washington Post.
Let me interrupt you there for just a second, Eric. What was this guy's name once again?
Lenny Robinson with, quote, Batman in the middle.
So he's both Batman and he's Robin's son.
Yep, that is
okay.
True.
Ooh, good catch.
Yeah. All right.
Is he now the gosh darn Batman?
Yes. Well, here's the thing. He often brings his son, this would be Robin's son's son, as Robin. So right. So it's Robin, Robin's son's son, if you want to go into that.
Oh, stay away from pipe wrenches, kid.
Here comes the suns. Doo-doo-doo-doo.
All right.
Okay, next story.
Also coming to us from Wired.com, this is basically something we've seen before. Digital publishers need to be bold. Basically advice saying that if you're going to go digital, you have to jump in. You can't do it halfway. You can't hold back. You have to go all the way in. And that is an interesting article, something we've talked about before. Coming to us from the Comics Bulletin is a story about, the problem with the comic book industry and the problems they're having. And one of the interesting quotes is about, being isolated from their fans and how that causes a problem. The article reads, "This isolation has been built and continued because there is a former fan turned pro mentality that secretly thumbs their noses at the readers they used to be. They are on the other side of the convention table now, and the last thing they want to do is be on that you to be on that side with them. They want your money, your applause, but after 5 minutes at the table or online, they want you to go away so that we'll have more time to snicker and poke fun at you with peers and share their snide conversations at the table. Trust me, there are very few comic book creators and folks on the publishing side that ever read comics today. They immerse themselves in their own work and maybe check out the works of their friends, but but other than looking to steal artists, they don't read comics for the most part. Hard to take, but trust me, it's true.
And so, let me interject on that. Do they happen to mention whether this is print professionals or is this webcomic professionals
This is print professionals that they're talking about. So this article is addressing print professionals only, but it is sort of talking about how that attitude is causing problems for the comic book industry. That finishes our tidbit section for this week, and I'll hand it over to Jason's for our oddities.
Thank you. Yes, oddities, where we bring you the oddities of the internet, as if you really thought there were any. Beginning over at Slashdot, at their hardware section, we have a really frightening story about the leaping robot, which there is a video, which can jump about 30 feet into the air. Yeah, this sort of reminds me of the movie Screamers, and we really don't need to be advancing robots any more than we really do if it's going to be threatening our lives. So if you want a little bit of a peek into the future and something to have nightmares about, please check it out. Then coming up next from Comics Alliance. Now, a lot of people may have seen this, but it's still pretty neat. Bjorn Hury has done steampunk versions of Star Wars characters. Go and take a look. It's really kind of neat, although once you start scrolling down, you'll see that they get a little bit more weird. The Han Solo in particular has a little bit more chest hair than I would have expected on a Han Solo. Next up, we have a story about the Tacocopter, a subject near and dear to my heart. I think this came out around Tuesday. If you actually check out tacocopter.com, the Tacocopter is basically a helicopter that will deliver tacos to you based on your location and an iPhone app or the website. This is a hoax. A very lovely, and I wish it were true hoax, but still it's a hoax because, you know, even though the U.S. government has decided to give, people the ability, actually drones on U.S. soil, they're all controlled by government agencies. So an unmanned drone on U.S. soil controlled by somebody who's in a commercial venue is just not going to happen. The FAA is going to go nuts. Still, we can dream. And that's, oh, wait a second, the small midget who brings me the news here is, just came up with a piece of paper. Hold on a second.
I thought Eric just left.
Anyway. No, it's the other midget.
Let me read this. Okay. Okay. Oh, looks like, from the webcomic Beacon Newscast, about Thomas Revor found to be disseminating phony news. Oh my God. Webcomic Beacon Newscast host Thomas Revor, you know that guy, Alex? Okay. Has been found to be releasing a bogus news story about DC co-publisher Dan DiDio leaving DC Comics. Wow. When asked about it, Revor said, "It's April 1st. Did anyone think DiDio would leave a cushy job where he could be as a bad writer and an editor and be promoted for it?"
I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
I believe that we all are, and somebody needs to pay the midget.
That's my shocked voice.
And that's it for oddities, folks.
And that's it for our news, too. We'll be right back after this break with our discussion panel.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at WebComicZ. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We are also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to episode 62 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. And it's time for our discussion time with myself, your host, Thomas Revor from 910 Comics. That's 910CMX.com. Also, our associate news editor, Jason Strasberg.
Hey.
And from alexisguide.net, Alex Eberling.
Sup.
let's go ahead and start off with our first discussion topic, and that's on becoming a full-timer. Over on his own website, evil-comic.com, Brad Geiger, the writer and artist for Evil Comic, as well as the venerable Greystone Inn, talks about finally making the transition from part-time to full-time webcomicker. I personally think this is a great, you know, like the old joke. I mean, it's a great job if you can get it. But it's also going to have a lot of downfalls as well, and because you are not guaranteed that regular paycheck. It's as good as your comic is, and unless you can make some sort of deal.
Reading that article from Geiger, I don't know if he's as well prepared as he would have been if he had time to do this. I mean, if you look at the reason for him doing this, it's, well, as we said, it's because of layoffs over at the Philadelphia Daily News. You know, and he's got this kind of nebulous thing about, you know, there's side projects I want to do, and there's, I haven't done all the licensing and marketing that I've wanted to do for some of the stuff. So, you know, it's good, all the best to him. I just want to see what's going to happen next. It just doesn't sound like he's got a really solid business plan at this point.
And his leaving his day job was as much about, you know, getting more time for his projects as it was actually his sort of week to daily schedule. Apparently he had a really good, like, you know, routine that really worked for him, but with the Philadelphia Daily News switching to a 24/7 organization, his work schedule would change. And he said that if you alter my current work schedule by one half hour in either direction, my entire day falls apart. So, I mean, if his work week was altered to anything from Sunday through Thursday, which apparently is what it's been for the last, you know, 8 odd years, it's gonna, you know, mess up his schedule even more. And, you know, he could be facing, you know, schedule changes multiple times a year. So,
oh, yeah, the con schedule.
That was also part of his decision. Yeah, with, you know, conventions and whatnot, it makes it even harder.
Well, I will say that, I mean, because it wasn't that long ago that Geiger was actually interviewed over on the Fox Business Channel about how to run a webcomic business and some of the business plans that he's had. And it did sound at that time that he knew what he was doing. And I do think that Brad is one of the brains behind halfpixel/webcomic.com, who has more sensibility in the business world and handling of the business than some of the others over there. But it is a big transition. I mean, because you do get used to that regular paycheck. And even when you know what you're doing, I mean, he's got savings, but it just like a backlog of comics, you're going to be finding that stuff running out before you know it. I do wish Brad all the best, because I do know a number of people, such as Randy Mulholland and Anonymous from Something Positive and The Watch, respectively, who did go full-time. And it is rough. Even when you're successful, it's going to be rough.
Well, what's expanded? I mean, Alex and Tom, both of you have running comics right now. I mean, if you were handed this opportunity, even imagine it's the best circumstances, would you take it? Or would you have to put everything on hold to find another job?
I would have to find another job immediately. Yeah. I live below the poverty line. And I'm not kidding when I say that.
Yeah,
so.
I'm the same way myself. I mean, no matter how successful you are, unless you really strike it big, like some of the people over at Half Pixel, some of the others, even Randy Mulholland. I mean, I think he's earning about $30,000, $20,000, $30,000. That's not that much. Most of the people who are going to be doing it, it all comes back down to not the comic itself, but merchandising, promoting the IP, and it's a lot of the other stuff that we've talked about in the business world. The comic itself will not be enough.
Right. So I mean, that you still need insurance at some point.
Absolutely. And with Brad having a family, I mean, that makes it even more difficult. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing when you're by yourself and doing this, because then you've got no responsibilities to other people other than, you know, the electric company, the water company, the mortgage company, and other people that you owe money to. But it's still going to be rough. And then to have that added weight of responsibility on there, I like I said, Brad's got a long, long history in webcomics. I mean, he's been doing this thing. Greystone Inn was for about 10 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And,
about that.
And 14-year seniority, basically doing something similar art stuff for the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News, where he was laid off from.
it's got to be a bit scary. I mean, and even though we see that he is sounding upbeat about it, it's got to be a bit scary on there, wondering what's going to be happening.
Now, yeah, I mean, and if it's scary for him, yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that people should not try this. People, if you have the heart, and especially, and remember this word, folks, if you have the passion for it, absolutely try it out. But, I mean, there are risks, and then there are stupid risks. Mm-hmm. Brad is taking the risk. Exactly. Have a business plan. Talk to others who have been in the business. Brad is one of those, I mean, and I actually send people over to him to talk about the business of webcomics at conventions. He does have a good head on his shoulders. And there is so much to learn from other people, you know, whether it be him or Dave Kellett, also or Half Pixel, or some of the people over at Blank Label, or some of the people who are independent, like Randy Mulholland. It takes a lot of skill. It takes a lot of expertise, a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge, and by God, a lot of luck.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Took the words out of my mouth. I was about to say. So good luck to him. Let's keep watching out there. And if you guys, if you see a solo artist out there who is going out on his own, hey, the donation button is still there as far as I know.
Absolutely. The economy is not great right now, so it's going to be even more risky and more scary for people right now. If you have a webcomic and you've got a few pennies to spare, click on that donate button, folks. I mean, there's a lot of things that can be done to help it. I mean, buy one of their books if you can. Get a commission sketch from them. You know, or just send them a donation to help keep the comics running. I mean, running a web server itself, I mean, you can get either the cheapy things where it's $5 a month or something like that, or you can go the full-blown running your own server, which could cost you anywhere from $150 on up, depending upon how much speed you want and how much capability you want. So this stuff is not cheap. It does come out of the pocket. And this is the voice of experience talking about that one, because I know how much it costs over at 910.
It's scary, folks. Well, yeah, so good luck to him, and let's just keep an eye on it.
Absolutely. All our best to you, Brad. Good luck with it. And, I mean, I know you've got some good stuff. I know the sales have been very good on the Half Pixel book, How to Do a Webcomic. So, I mean, I know what you're doing, but it's always, you know, best of luck to you from us. And now on to our next story. The story about, you know, titled Bad Comic Books, Bad Medicine, My Diagnosis from Bo Smith over at comicsbulletin.com. This was talked a little bit about in the newscast about the fans turned pro and their change in attitude towards other fans. Now, we've talked about this in the past as well, simply because there's it's not just in the print industry. We've seen this happen to some of those who became successful in webcomics as well, and how some of them treat fans. Now, it's... I just sit back and I shake my head when I see this. One of the big bugaboos I've always had about co-publisher Dan DiDio of DC Comics is the way that he treats fans at conventions. And I've been told by some people that, yeah, in real life, he's really a nice guy and he'll do a lot for you. But at conventions, he treats the fans like crap. He will be derogatory. He will be insulting to these fans. And this isn't just one person's opinion. This is stuff that's been captured on video, released on YouTube and so many other sites, and people can see it for themselves.
That's just the deal, though. I mean, I've never run into that with a smaller publisher or a smaller artist. I mean, I think that they've all been really just ingratiating and wanting to work with you, wanting to talk with you. I think, and that kind of surprises me. And, you know, I don't think it's really that different right now. If you're flipping over to the subject that, you know, that your fans are just another generation of people who want to take your job, you know, it's always been that way. It's always been that way. There's nothing really to be so sick about.
There's actually a paragraph in this article, and let me quote it here. Again, this is from Bo Smith over at comicsbulletin.com. Quote, "In all my years of marketing, I have never seen an industry so out of touch with their consumers. This isolation has been built and continued because there is that former fan-turned-pro mentality that secretly thumbs their nose at the readers they used to be. They are on the other side of the convention table now, and the last thing they want you to do is be on that side with them. They want your money and your applause, but after 5 minutes at the table or online, they want you to go away so they'll have more time to snicker and poke fun of you with their peers that share their side of the convention table. Trust me.
Eric was saying that, too. I mean, it's... Yeah, that mentality has always been there, though.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I won't say that it's always been there. I've been on all sides of convention tables. I've been there as a, quote, fan. I've been there as convention staff. I've been there as a dealer, and I've been there as a pro.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the professionals, other professionals that I've dealt with are very kind. One of the ones that immediately springs to mind is Todd Nock. Artist, which is for Wildstorm and DC Comics. He did Young Justice with Peter David.
Okay.
And he was as nice as could be. And a lot of the artists that I've met were nice and kind. I mean, they'd be willing to talk to you. I mean, a lot of them didn't have time to do personal reviews of your art, but that's understandable because at the conventions, there's a lot of Russian people who want to see these things. Mm-hmm. But that I won't say that I haven't seen the other side of it as well. I've seen the people who have gotten the big heads. I'm dealing with celebrities, and this isn't in the print world, but as an example, an extreme example, of William Shatner or Harlan Ellison. And Ellison, who is a master writer, but he can be, in person, one of the biggest jackasses I've ever met in my life.
Well, Ellison was a creep, and Shatner's and I'm not going to say he's also a creep, but, you know, this is you're dealing with persona, and persona's always been that way. I just don't think it's a fair comparison. There are people out there who are just really working hard to be, to do what they're doing and enjoy what they're doing. And like I said, they're always happy to talk to you on the con scene or to review your work. You just got to find them at the right time. There's always the chance of finding somebody when they're in a bad mood. Big deal. I'm trying to figure out where this is coming from. I think that if you look at the professional comics industry, quote unquote, from the top down, there's a lot of there's a large gap between what the audience is looking for and what is being produced out there. I don't think anyone can deny that. But to put it on this ground level, I don't think that it really is a fair comparison.
Well, I think that saying that there are a lot of people like that, the fans turned pro, who quote thumb their nose at the readers. They used to be. A lot of it is fear because they know once you've been in the business for a while, your stuff can at least start to seem stale or hackneyed. And I'm not saying that that always happens. I'm not saying that ever happens, but I'm saying that that does happen at times, or at least the fear of it. And you know that there's this huge talent pool out there, especially now with webcomics and the internet, to where this stuff doesn't require the big publishers to get out there and get a fan base. And that's got to be frightening to these people, that people who figured, I mean, if this could happen to me, it could happen to other people as well. So, I mean, fear could be a driving factor of it.
I guess so. But if you put in that situation, I'd say grow up, because that's the way that the world is moving. I don't know. But that's really not a good answer.
Yeah, I don't really understand what creators, you know, pros, you know, fan-turned pros could have to gain by being that sort of self-hating nerd.
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to make sense. I mean, that's why it's called irrational, because there's no rational reason for it. Some of it is just ego. I mean, I've made it this big. I'm better than everybody else. Some of it could be, as I said, fear. You know, I mean, one of these people could take my job. Why should I help them take my job? Some of it could just be, you know, as you said, it could be just be a bad day. It's when it's been repeated. And again, I go back to the example of Dio, who is repeatedly on video showing what a jerk he can be. Whether or not he is in real life, he could be the nicest guy in life. But when you're behind that table or you're at a panel and you've got somebody asking you questions and you just give them flip answers or are insulting to them or don't bother to take the time, these fans are also the ones that pay your paycheck. And
I guess so. But I mean, think about the guy who's standing next to him, Jim Lee. You know, I've never run into a bad time with Jim Lee.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of people. I mean, I know that when I do conventions myself, I mean, I'm always willing to take time. I mean, I spent several hours after a panel talking to somebody about how to get into webcomics or what's needed. I'm more than willing to answer emails, and there are so many more out there. But there, as I said, I mean, there are a few out there, and it's the bad apples that are the ones that are remembered.
Well, I think that the mentality of the print publishers is different. It always has been that way.
Well, I mean, I won't even say it's print publishers. I mean, we've had people in the webcomic industry who have become a running joke because of how because of their bad attitudes, and not just towards other fans, but towards other professionals.
Yeah, well, you can also get a lot of mileage out of that too. They can get a lot of mileage out of that being that persona.
The old no publicity is bad publicity mentality.
Yeah. That would be it.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, I mean, I'm not uber successful with the webcomics. I spend more time making sure others get promoted than promoting myself. But it's also the old which goes into the mentality that I have about this whole thing. But I mean, you can take a look at the old corporate saying, you know, be careful of who you step on the way up because you'll be meeting on the way back down.
That's very true. I think we're working towards more niche audiences. I mean, Alex, how many people you saw the last year maybe brought people back, and people that you probably have a better one-on-one relationship and a stronger fan base with just because you were there?
Oh, I have my fan base is kind of divided between, there's a few people who have read my comics and found me at conventions, but the majority of regulars that I meet at conventions are, you know me because I always go to almost all the local and regional conventions, and they know me from that rather than actually knowing me for my comics specifically.
But you're working on a smaller, it's still a niche audience, right? Is it not?
Yeah. It's lots of work toward. Yeah, it's lots of, you know, anime kids and other stuff like that.
And you're not aiming for world dominance at this point, right?
Well, not at this point.
That would be nice.
Eventually.
Right? So I think that the my point is that I'm trying to make here is that, you know, everybody wants to be the next everybody has that mentality that they can be the next Marvel Image or DC, and that's really not going to happen, and I don't think the way the world is working at this point is something you want to aim towards. I think that really, if your fan base is, and you're keeping yourself out there using whatever you want, social media or going to cons, and you're just being out there, I think that you're going to find a lot of success, and you're going to find a lot of dedicated people looking after you.
I will agree with that. I mean, because we can take a look at back at the print industry. I look at some of the old timers, quote unquote, you know, from who were doing comics in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. When you would meet them at conventions, you would see them, and they would be more than glad to talk to you. I mean, I remember one convention where the late, great Julie Schwartz was holding court, and people were just sitting around him enthralled in what he was saying about the workings of the industry and some of the inside information there, because this is someone who had made it, quote unquote, and who was a well-known name. But then we take a look at what was called the rock star mentality of some of the people in the 90s. Image Comics was
called, first thank called, you 90s.
Yeah. Image Comics, where they had the first rock stars of comics, you know, and
oh God,
some of them, some of them were nice. Some of them had a huge attitude. Some of them thought they walked on water. And, again, the print industry, I'm not going to say it's dead because it's not. I will say that it's been seriously wounded. And this is a time when Eric has talked about Marvel Comics and how they have a terrible merchandising marketing system, how they mistreat the fans. DC has been shown to be doing some of that as well, but they've had other people who come back and kind of make up for it. But this is your bread and butter, folks. I mean, there's no reason for it.
The basic thing is don't be a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and this all comes back from people who like us who work in the webcomic industry. We are a much smaller industry, and the feedback is a lot more immediate. In the print industry, I mean, it used to be 3 or 4 months before you would get a letter from a fan about an issue that's released, and then you would have to read it and write a response. And the letter columns were always gracious to the fans. Then you come along with the internet, where you've got, like I said, that more immediate response. And all too often, people would put down the first thing that comes to their mind. And unfortunately, that comes back down to trolling, where it's just, you're going to be, you feel snarky, or you don't like what they say, and you are a little angry about it, or you're just a jerk. And it comes, you'll get that immediate response instead of having the time to sit back and think about it and come up with a more politically correct response.
I guess so. There's always going to be trolls on the internet. I don't think that it's something to get horribly out of whack about.
Yeah, but this isn't just on the internet as well. This is conventions. This is letters. This is interviews. I mean, you can come across polished in an interview, and then that's because you've got a written statement and you know exactly what you're going to say, and then you come across with a question out of left field, and you are hit blindsided and don't know what to do and come go off the reservation. How many more metaphors can I stick into this thing?
That was pretty good.
You could have gotten a couple more in there.
The left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. And
but when you get out in the reservation, that's where you get as a true test anyways. You get to see where the crazy comes out. And then you know who you're dealing with.
Exactly. And
jumping on couches, you know.
People will remember this stuff. I mean, why do people have the big hate on for Dan DiDio? Well, partially because he is a hack writer and a hack editor. Because he's rehashed ideas. Because he's rehashed ideas that have failed in the 90s and the 2000s. And because he does have a more than a bit of arrogance. I mean, there has to be a little bit of arrogance in business. You have to have that want, that killer instinct that a lot of people in the webcomic industry and even in the comic industry don't have. I mean, let's face it, most of us in webcomics are geeks, are nerds, are spazzes, or how many other things from Revenge of the Nerds that I can bring up.
But there also a lot of them are of a professional mindset as well, at least the successful ones.
Exactly. And that's just it. The successful ones where they do have that mindset to where it's not just business, but because marketing and promotions is part of the business, folks. And how you come across to both fans, other professionals, and publishers is going to be a big thing. I mean, that first impression is always, 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 always going to be one of the most important. It can take you a long, long time to come over and get over a bad first impression.
I guess so. Not so much today, because there's also the fact that you can go back to it. And because of interconnectivity of people, yeah, you can make a bad first impression, but you can still kind of build on that. It's better to have a bad impression than have them not know who you are at all.
That's true as well.
Unless you, set their cat on fire, then I would probably not talk to them. Not that I'm speaking from experience.
Sure you're not.
So I think that to get back to it, though, there are a lot of people who are frightened because of the fact that there's probably an entire audience of people who may not or are looking for your job, but also may be a lot better than you. You can get freaked out about it, or you can work with these people in building their own careers. I think that's what our bottom line is right here.
Right. And let's also, I want to go back to another publisher, another paragraph in this article where it talks about a lot of the people who are trying to get into the comics industry nowadays, their main source of reading has been comic books. Now, this is where some of the old timers have a little bit of an attitude, because what did they read when they were growing up? I mean, not only classic science fiction that was fresh at that point, but Shakespeare, Homer, I mean, all the classics, both written and poetry, and they've seen the things that have been done, and the way to tell
a
story.
Really, That's a very dangerous paragraph to bring up, though. I mean, you're assuming that that there's an entire generation of hack writers out there, and I would argue that there is not. That you get into the fact that you're arguing against the education system at that point. You have to give them the old creators. They have to sit down and realize that this is also due to their success, the prevalency of comics, the fact that they've gotten over things like the comics code, and the story of, you know, corrupting the innocent. I think, you know, what do you want? Do you want us to start just hiding our comics under our beds, or start reading, or all the comics to be in a zine that you can only get if you find the right guy and hand him $5?
See, I think that's a misnomer because, I mean, yeah, Seduction of the Innocent was a horrible thing. The Comics Code had its purposes. It allowed comics to continue to live. But I do think that there are a lot of people, and you go to a comic book convention, and 50% of the people who bring up art to be looked at is going to be bringing up art in a manga style because that's what they grew up with. A lot of the writers are going to be bringing up stuff that is rehashes of comic book plots. That's not all of them. The ones who are really taking off are the writers who have, first and foremost, the ability to tell a story. And that requires more of an education, whether it be the public or private education systems or self-education, but no more than just comic books.
Then it comes down to read beyond your scope.
Absolutely. I mean, experience is always going to be the biggest thing that you can have. I don't care if you've never read Shakespeare in your life. If you've gone out there and lived life and have a lot of experience to draw upon, that's going to be a big thing as well. And again, webcomic people, a lot of them are the ones who are nerdy, who haven't really gone out and done a lot of stuff. I mean, how much stuff have we read that's Mary Sue-ish?
That's true. And I mean, you could also say how many comics have you read that were a video game webcomic? I think that you just have to take a look at what's out there and try and differentiate yourself. And yeah, be a good storyteller. If you're not and you don't feel confident in your storytelling abilities, work on it. That's a bottom line.
Right. It's a fine line between confidence and arrogance. And once you cross that line, it's hard to go back.
And don't be afraid to be smacked in the face if you're so arrogant.
Go ahead, Alex.
Me think of a couple years ago, Neil Gaiman released some photographs of his personal library. And that thing is gigantic. It's like, if you need an example of how big your library should be and what you should be, you know, reading and drawing from, go search for photos of Neil Gaiman's library.
Well, go down to the public library, even a small library. Especially in this electronic age. I mean, don't use Wikipedia. Go down and read a dictionary or an encyclopedia. Do research. Research is the most wonderful thing when you're doing something.
You can get the classics of literature at Barnes & Noble or any other bookstore for less than $5 a piece.
Yeah, no, that makes a great weapon after you're done.
Yeah. Or, I mean, stores, use bookstores out there like Half Price Books.
If you're reading a comic of a classic, read the classic. I think that this was in The Critic with John Lovitz.
Well, I mean, I personally, the other day I went and saw The Hunger Games, which was a good movie. I don't think the movie is the classic and the great storytelling that everybody says that it is, that I've talked to. I think it's very, very good. I thought the cinematography and all that was good. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go out and read the book because there is a huge difference between the storytelling in a movie and a book. There's a huge difference between a classic illustrated and the classic. And seeing the difference also tells you, it gets you thinking, why did they do this way? Why did they move this from here to here? What is the reason for the storytelling?
Yeah, I think that the danger in that is, I remember when I was trying to broaden my own storytelling, and you notice that there's a lot of speed bumps in the way that you look at literature. You can look back and say, for a perfect example, Bronte or you know, some of the classic Victorian romances, and you can write those off because, you know, they're romances, they're icky, those are Those are terrible things. But there's a reason that these things are becoming classics. There's a reason that they're published and republished and reprinted and reprinted even 200 years later. And just don't write something off because it makes you feel icky.
Or because go ahead, Alex.
And plus, you know, the definition of romantic in the modern vernacular is much different from the actual definition of romantics, the School of Art and Literature.
Exactly. It's so not it's a Harlequin.
It's a change in cultural perspectives too.
Right. And story books that you're assigned in school. I mean, there are books that I was assigned, you know, way back when.
Year of yesterday.
Yep. Catcher in the Rye, 1984, Animal Farm, Charlie. Mm-hmm. I mean, that have been retold and redone time and time again. And yet, I sat down and I read these things as an adult this time, and some of them I thought were garbage. Some of them I thought were unbelievably well written. And you got into the character.
Yeah, and the fact is that we, as readers, we become we look at things and we just gloss over it. Like for the Great Gatsby, you say that now.
I hated the Great Gatsby.
I realize that, but you should look at some of his other pulp work. I mean, it's so much fun to dig into an author, a classic author, and see what they've done before. See what they did to pay the bills. See how they didn't just come out of the womb with a pen in hand and say, I'm going to create this great work of art. They had to get there somehow. So, you know, you find an author that you like or even one that makes you go, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I love reading some of the old pulps. I mean, love The Shadow, Doc Savage, you know, Gangbusters. Reading both the books, the stories, and listening to the old radio plays. I mean, it's a slice of time. I mean, one of my favorite things was we did, back when I was in radio as a youngster, we did The War of the Worlds by Orson Welles.
Yes.
And seeing not just the size of time that it was, because it was a different mindset, it was a different perspective, it was a different time, but also the reasons for that. Why did he do this? Why was this written? I take a look at Tom Clancy. And, I mean, this is a guy who writes novels that are convoluted as all get out, who have red herrings and plots and a lot of stuff where, I mean, he's actually been interviewed a number of times by the CIA and the FBI to find out how he found out stuff that they weren't releasing. And it was because it was an educated guess. Yeah, it was his imagination. It was an educated guess based off of his experience and his research. He does more research on anything before he does a story. I mean, it's unbelievable. I'm talking contacts that he has in the military, talking contacts he has in the intelligence agencies, in the government, and getting and doing some of this stuff to where, I mean, I don't know if he's ever gone down to South America and helped stage a coup.
He's got to pay for the bill somehow.
But he's talked to people who has. Mm-hmm. He's gotten their points of view. So, I mean, that all comes across with a story. So, I mean, when you talk to him, I mean, there is a little bit of distance because he is a bit of a cold and distant person. There is a little bit of, I don't want to use arrogance, but it's, yeah, he spent so much time that there is a bit of arrogance in there because he is the one who has spent this time doing the research, doing the investigation, putting the time in. I mean, the amount of man hours he puts in before he does one book is staggering. Same thing. I mean, Neil Gaiman, you talk about his library and the amount of research that he does. I take a look at some of the stuff that Alan Moore, I mean, the great Alan Moore has done, or even now Jeff Johns over at DC or even some of the others, to where they put in the research. They know the characters that are going in there, and they write a good story. So, I mean, I can understand. I always had this line, you know, I mean, he's arrogant, but he's earned it. Some of these people have earned it. Now, that's not an excuse for it. But it's a bit of an understanding for it. because there is so much work, as opposed to someone who comes up and does a sprite comic and puts themselves on the same level.
Hey, if your sprite comic is telling me a story akin to something that I'm reading in a popular novel and I'm enjoying, I will read it.
Absolutely.
Even though my eyes will probably be bleeding. If it's got a good story, I will probably go back. So,
Yeah, I know we swayed off topic a little bit, going from why people have some of the attitudes as to why some of these people have the attitudes as to how you should be doing a comic. But it really does come back down to learning, to education, to understanding. I mean, Alex, you and I both do webcomics. Jason's the oddball here.
I'm always the oddball.
Yeah. But, I mean, you also do you do the research for the podcast here. So, I mean, again, we don't get up with these stories just springing whole from Zeus's head. There's a lot of research that goes into it.
Yeah, hey, don't tell them my sources.
Yeah, this is a classical education where people might understand this reference. So, not that I'm being arrogant or anything. How much research do you do when you do your comic? I mean, you're more of a slice of life, so, I mean, you're experiencing this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the experience, but I have been starting to work on the comic. I'll start posting online this summer, and it's taking a lot of time between, you know, researching various, you know, people to reference with character designs and locations and all sorts of other things. I just picked up this great book on drawing and perspective for comic artists. And
it's called?
It's called The Hues.
Okay.
As in the colors hues.
Not Howard.
No. And it's about a group of survivors of an alien invasion, in short. And so I've been researching, you know, sort of wilderness survival stuff and, you know, various forms of the apocalypse and whatnot in order to try to do it good.
Right. Yeah, and it's all there. And it's not easy.
Nope.
No, I am
but one person and time is finite.
Yeah. Don't expect that you know everything. And even when you do know something, don't expect to always get it right. I still am embarrassed about something I did in Crossworlds, my first webcomic, to where I made a reference to forging steel and I talked about the purity of the steel. I grew up in a steel town. I took field trips every year to the blast furnaces. I know how steel is made. And there is no purity to steel. In fact, what makes it stronger than iron is an impurity.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I screwed that up, and even though I should know better. But it's still, yeah. I mean, the research was done, the knowledge was there. It was just the idiocy of the person doing it.
Yeah. Though, there's a lot of work to be done. And I think that if you're willing to do it, then success may be in your future.
Yeah, I mean, we're not kidding when we say that there's a lot of luck that comes into it. Over this year at the National Cartoonist Society, they are giving Jim Davis, the creator of Garfield, a Lifetime Achievement Award. And Garfield was just not, you know, smack out of the box. I mean, he didn't just pick up a pen, draw Garfield, and that was it. Davis put a lot of time in apprenticing and learning the trade, learning both the art and the writing and the business portions of it. And
petting lots of cats.
Well, he's from Indiana. Mm-hmm. That's expected. And I say that as a Hoosier myself, folks.
I don't.
At a proud one. But it was a lot of time in there. And even then, he says, I mean, there's still a lot of luck that goes into this. There's always going to be a lot of luck in this. Who you know, what you know, where being the right person, the right time, having the ability to do it. So, and I mean, Davis is one of the most affable people that you can probably meet next to Bill Holbrook.
Good point.
But at that note, I think that you summed it up pretty well, Jason. I mean, it basically says, don't be a dick. And
Wheaton's rule.
Yes.
First rule of the internet, don't be a dick. Second rule, don't read the comments.
And let's go ahead and wrap this up with a final say from First Alex.
See you next week. You can find my work at alexsguide.net.
And then our associate news editor, Jason Strasberg.
You're still with us. God bless you, and go to bed.
And for the missing Eric Kimball, who you can find over at bladebunny.com. And I'm Thomas Rapport from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. I want to wish everybody out there a happy April 1st. Hope you didn't find some of our pranks and laughter too bad. And we'll see you in the funny papers.
Oh, dear.